there, and welcome to the Marlena program for the week of April the 16th. I'm Marlena. The song you're hearing in the background is called Marlena, written by my good friend Chrissy Cochran in the UK. We're going to be with you for the next couple hours, so come on in and take your shoes off and get yourself a nice tasty beverage and enjoy the show. I'm glad you're here. Well, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever this is. It's been a wild and crazy week around here. We've just gotten back from a wonderful, what was I gone? 4 days, I guess, with the folks at the California Council of the Blind. I tell you, what a great group they are. They made me feel welcomed and a part of things. Hope you got to listen to some of their convention. We were working very hard to bring it to you, and hope that you found that enjoyable. Let me clearing my throat in your ear here, but let me, before I bring on our guest tonight, kind of run through the housekeeping details that we always sort of go through at the beginning of each hour on the Marlena program. If you're listening to this program between the hours of 6 to 8 Pacific, 9 to 11 Eastern, on a Sunday night in North America, or 1 to 3 on an early UTC morning, you are listening live, and we hope that you will call us at 866-666-7926. If you're listening at any time other than those hours, such as perhaps on a replay during the next 24, then, of course, it is a replay, and so just put your feet up and enjoy the program. Well, I'm always delighted to have this guest join me, and this is a person who has just more energy than you can capsulize in anything, including a gallon of coffee. And I'm particularly delighted tonight because I am a little hoarse, and I'm not sure that I have a guest who can talk as much as my good friend, Mr. Dale Campbell, the man who proves that you don't need sight to cook dinner tonight. Hey, Dale, welcome.
Hey, Marlena, what in the heck is going on out there in California?
Well, and now I'm in Seattle. So, I don't
man,
know.
I have been just in a whirlwind, too.
Yeah, what do you
mean? I was on the East Coast, and then they did a time change, and then I'm back here, and I don't know where I'm at, and I don't know where you're at. And
Oh, my gosh. I don't know where I'm at either, so it ought to be a good show.
I say, that's right, man. Have another one and just enjoy the show,
that's
everybody.
That's right, because
we
don't know.
We're going to be in fast-forward mode. We don't know where we're going or where we're going to end up.
Or where we've been, right?
That's right. Hey, oh, goodness. Now, we were back in the studio today for the first time. I haven't been in the studio in, since February.
Yeah, because you...
You know, recording.
Yeah,
and, I couldn't find stuff, and my goodness. I mean, we were just doing some simple recipes today. We've got a great show coming up, you know, Thursday. Plus, I'll let the cat out of the bag a little bit early. You're going to love it because we're now recording through Skype.
I am going to love it.
So our levels are crisp and clear.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
You can hear all my mistakes.
Oh, good. I like that. I think Tim should put together a blooper reel.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Wouldn't that be
he
great?
He would love doing that. That
All
would
right.
be so great.
Tim, if you're listening, we want a blooper reel.
Yes. All of the edits and the, and the you know, the best blooper was the very first show we ever recorded. Skylar was helping me.
Yeah.
And I told her, I said, now look, if anything goes, you know, if anything goes haywire, if I pick up the wrong ingredient from what I'm saying it is or something, just, you know, don't say anything. So, you know, she was, goodness gracious, what, 8 at that time?
Yeah.
9?
Yeah.
And I put a cookie sheet in the oven, and it had a wooden spoon hanging off of it. I didn't know it. And that fell off across the heating element and caught on fire.
Oh, no.
And bless her heart, she didn't say a word. Now, when the fire department showed up. That gave it away, but no.
Oh, that's cute. You know, children.
She was real cool.
Children are wonderful, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. She just kind of whispered in my ear, there's a spoon on fire. Oh, goodness gracious. It is just, it's crazy. But, you know, I mean, the tax man cometh tomorrow.
Yes.
Oh, that's heavy. We filed our extension, so we're good to go.
Yeah, so did we.
I got other stuff to do than worry about the tax man right now.
I know it. I know. We got to worry about it sometime.
We are deep in the middle of the mouth hole scholarships, the essay contest.
You know, now I do want to talk about that, but hold off on that for one
okay.
minute here. I can't imagine that there is someone alive who listens to ACB Radio who doesn't know who you are, but in the event that we have new listeners or people have been in a cave or they've been in Siberia or someplace where the internet doesn't go, let's back up just a little bit and let's tell a little bit of your story. In fact, I received an email. No, it wasn't an email. It was actually a suggestion from Jeff Bishop, who said, you know, it would be really cool to have Dale on sometime and have him tell his story. So before we get into the Mousehole Scholarships, which will be the focus of what we're doing, and then, of course, we're going to ask you for a recipe. We're not going to let our gallivanting gourmet go without giving us a recipe.
Oh, I've got some great ones, Dale.
Yeah, I knew you would. But talk to me a little bit about who you are. You have not always been blind, is that right?
That's right. That's right. I was, back in November of 95. Here's the crazy part. It was actually October the 29th, 1995. We were rolling down the freeway, coming home from a free little concert, this little band that we used to follow. And I was in the back seat of a convertible, and then we got ran off the freeway by a Hyundai.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it couldn't even have been a cool car. It was a Ferrari or a daggum Hyundai.
One of those disposable cars.
Yeah. You know, a little four-door. And I'm in a 1995 Firebird convertible looking good. Well, I always look good, but that's beside the point. But, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Our driver swerved to miss this car. And when he did, he lost control of the car, and we were actually going sideways down the freeway. So, you know, that tells me right there that we had, I mean, destiny was on our side. Because if that car would have hit anything and flipped, everybody probably would have been dead.
Sure.
You know, in that convertible. And anyway, the rear wheels caught. We slammed into the retaining wall. I flew out and hit the window frame, crushed my face. You know, and here's the cool part. I was laying on the side of the road, and a voice asked me, "Do you want to live or die?" And I was like, you talk about getting your attention, man. I'm living. So the voice said, yes, live for Chris. And I felt hands on the back of my neck and the small of my back, and I got laid in the fetal position. And as soon as I was touched and laid over, Marlena, perfect utopia. I mean, just not, it is, to this day, I still have never experienced that feeling. It was just not a care in the world, nothing. And, long story short, 7 days later, I wake up and, you know, my family's around my bed and I'm like, man, what'd y'all do to my hair? And what, holy, and then the pieces started falling in place. And, basically it took them 22 hours to put me back together. I underwent like 5 surgeries on my eyes just
wow.
trying to repair or replace or do what they could do. And basically the impact blew my left eye, just blew it up. And, the retina on my back, on my right eye was blown off. So I'm a retina-less. Yeah, I'm not naked, listen, I'm just retinaless. But anyway, so it was just like one of those things, and the whole time the doctors were like, you know, oh, you're going to be blind and da-da-da-da-da. So, I mean, in the long run, I mean, I had great doctors. They told me what was up. They didn't pull any punches, and it allowed me to concentrate on, you know, getting well and getting the heck out of there and figuring out life without sight, you know?
Now, what was the live for Chris statement about? Do you know?
I still do not know. I have a younger brother named Chris. I was dating a girl at that time named Chris. And then I thought, well, maybe he meant Christ. I was in a total quandary. And because of that, I've walked all types of paths, I guess, trying to find the answer. You know, I mean, I looked for it in church. Wasn't there. I looked for it in the New Age religions. I looked for it kind of in quote-unquote white witchcraft with some different energy therapists and doing different things. I looked for it in the hills of Bandera, Texas, out amongst the Indians and the beliefs there. And I mean, I've been on some wild rides and just stuff that's really weird, seances that left me with my hair standing up on the back of my neck, you know?
Wow, yeah.
And I still have never found that answer, but I'm not searching anymore. You know, I found my peace. And I think some of that Live for Chris was for me to get over it myself.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and still, I mean, to this day, I'm not, you know, I mean, bottom line, whew, I don't like it. But what are you going to do, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit around and whine and complain about it. And I'm doing, you know, people I've met and things I've done and places I've gone, boy, you know, I'm often left thinking, wow, I'm glad I'm me and not, you know, not that person or not in that situation and things. And that's not just blind. I mean, that's sighted and that, I mean, that's everybody, you know?
Well, and I think it may be also true that your blindness has brought you some opportunities that you dearly love now, like your Blind Mice Mart and the scholarships that we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
And your cooking show. And you probably wouldn't have done any of those things if you were sighted.
Oh, no. I was totally on a different path. I was on the way. I was working for a cable company. And I was chosen as one of the few to go to Las Vegas to introduce the sales program that we were doing in Houston to the Las Vegas people. I mean, basically here we had four salespeople doing the job of about 30 technicians. And, I mean, we were paid very well for it, thank goodness. I mean, that's what allowed, you know, living on 60% of that income isn't great, but I'm doing a heck of a lot better than a lot of people. So, I mean, that's freed me up for Blind Mice Mart to actually allow me not to have to worry about earning income off of what we sell.
Sure.
I mean, my main goal is to, you know, let's get some scholarships together for these kids. And, you know, a lot of that grew out of I was going with my guide dog, Kelsey, at the time, to school to talk to some kindergartners and first graders. Because I really feel that if we can let them know, educate them about guide dogs, it's going to be much more for us in the future than trying to educate the parents or, you know, the crazy old lady that sees you give a leash correction and comes, yeah, I'm going to call the cops on you if you don't stop beating your dog, you know. And
She lives in Texas, too.
Yes,
huh?
She does, man. She came by and Candace was trying to explain to her that, you know, I was trying to get Dean to do country work. And, you know, finally I said, you know what, go ahead and call the cops. And what is your name, please? Well, why do you want my name? Because I'm going to have them arrest you for harassment. And with that, we turned and walked away, you know, and she drove like a little shark cruising up and down the road watching us, you know, three or four more times. I was like, oh, geez, just call the cops, please. Anyway, whew, you know, people, they're a trip. But I called Ambutech Canes, and they sent me a couple little canes, like a 30-inch and a 36-inch cane, you know, for toddlers. So when I went to talk to the kids, I could express to them and show them also how, you know, how the blind people travel with canes, as well as the guide dogs. And, man, holding that cane in my hand, it just broke my heart. Because I was blessed enough, I was lucky enough as a little kid to score touchdowns, to hit the baseball, to kick goals in soccer, to go swimming, to see sunsets, to, you know, experience a lot of things that some little kid with a cane may not be able to do. And I thought, you know, this has got to change. I've got to do something to make this better. And it was weird how pieces just started falling into place. You know, next thing, here comes Blind Mice Mart and then the scholarship program. And you know, here we are today.
Well, tell me, how did Blind Mice Mart start?
Blind Mice Mart actually started in 1998 as Blind Products. Myself and a sighted associate of mine, a friend, I thought, a guy I'd worked with at Sears, started a company called Blind Products. And from there, he was wanting to diversify into blind foods because his wife's family owned a grocery store here in town. And I tried to express to him that I didn't think people were going to pay, you know, to have grocery items shipped to them. You know, especially with the time delays, you know, maybe in a rare occurrence, if it was a real specialty item, they might, but I'm not going to pay to have five or six cans of, you know, Campbell's cream of mushroom soup shipped to me.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't going to work. So we got a little crossways over that, and we were together signing papers, of which he told me were for web domains. Well, one of the papers was a paper that signed me out of the business.
Oh, my gosh, you're kidding.
No. So, now, I mean, he took my idea. He took everything. Now, I mean, I got a check in the mail for my investment, but, oh, I was, ooh. You know, I was mad. And that's one of the times I was thinking, you know, I'm glad I'm blind. Because if not, they'd be looking for me for something. Because I would have found that dude. I mean, we would have danced a little bit, and it wouldn't have been pretty. Because that was just not cool. But, I mean, once the dust settled, and here came Blind My Smart. I thought, you know, I still want to do something on the web, and I started building it myself. And with Blind Products, we were strictly going to sell adaptive products. And our biggest competitors, of course, you know, were, you know, Independent Living and MaxiAids and Ann Morris. I got with her and got on board with her, and she was going to be one of our suppliers, you know, and she gave me some wholesale pricing. And then when Blind Products went under, I started Blind My Smart, and then I spoke to her, and she again gave me the same deal. So then through her, now that's how she's gotten me hooked up with Independent Living Aids, how they're one of my suppliers. So we can still offer, you know, adaptive products as well as all the gifts and all the scented candles and bath sets and, oh my gosh, glass, crystal, Mother's Day, I mean, products out the yin-yang.
one of the things that people ask me about Blind My Smart occasionally is, does he do that from his house? And I know that you do, but do you have a warehouse, people want to know?
I do have a small warehouse, yes. And basically everything is rent. Yeah, it was funny because the metro, the bus service here called, and they were wanting to know, how long is your commute to work, you know? And I go, well, depends. They go, depends on what? Depends if I've made coffee or not. If not, it's about 15 minutes. If I have, it's about 3 minutes, you know, what it takes to get upstairs. So I love that. I was like, aha, that's funny. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of items I try to drop ship. I don't try to carry a lot of stuff in inventory. Because if I have, say, $10,000 or $12,000 in inventory, that's $10,000 or $12,000 that at the end of the fiscal year when we do our books, that's not available to the kids.
Sure.
You know, so I try. It's a line, and it's kind of a fun line. I mean, I enjoy playing it because, I mean, there's times when I could order a ton of stuff, but I don't want to. Just because of the fact that I want to keep it at a level to where we have enough inventory in here that I can fill orders without making people wait a long time, you know, for them. And at the same time, I can still build that scholarship fund.
Well, let's talk about that scholarship fund. What is the Mouse Hole Scholarship Program?
The Mouse Hole Scholarship Fund is a scholarship for graduating high school seniors that are continuing on to college either in the fall, you know, after they graduated in May or June, or they will be enrolling into college the following semester, the spring semester of in this case, 08. Man, 08, goodness gracious.
I know.
That's weird.
I know, it's scary.
The scholarships are open to, of course, visually impaired and blind students or sighted students with visually impaired or blind either parent or parents. Now, as I understand, we're the only scholarship that I've been able to find that's open to both at the same time. And it's kind of cool. The winners we've had, our top winners have usually been visually impaired. They even beat out a couple of the sighted winners that we've had.
Now, how do they enter into the competition, if you will?
Okay, the best way is just, well, the only way, actually, is to go to Blind My Smart. Click on the Mouse Hole Scholarships link, which is up near the top, and on that page it will give a list of the rules or regulations, whatever you want to call the qualifications of who can participate and yada, yada, yada. There is a link there also where they can email us and ask us for an application. Now, what we ask is that the kids write an essay or a short story, however you want to look at it, from 3 to 15 pages. And the topic this year is I want them to pretend that it's 5 years in the future and they are on their way back to their five-year high school graduation reunion. And I want them to then, in my mind's eye, it allows them to have some fun and to play with what their future is going to be. You know, think about the future. What do you want? What are you going to college for? What in high school was dictated that you go to this path? You know, because I tell you what, when I started, I kind of knew what I wanted to do, but I really didn't know. I mean, I was on the 8-year plan, so by the time I graduated, I graduated, a degree in what? Oh, okay. Professional college student, that was me.
No, we don't give degrees in mixology in this
school. No, cake tapping. Yes.
Cake tapping, right.
That was the problem, yes. Joining that fraternity and, you know, get on probation in the fall and then get off probation in the spring. It was a vicious cycle, goodness gracious.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh, man. But it was fun. I wouldn't trade a bit of it for anything, you know.
How do you come up with the topics for the essays each year?
I just kind of basically make them up. I don't want it to be where it's the same old boring, tell us about yourself. You know, I was born blind, and my name is John, and my dad is this, and my mom, you know, I don't want that. I don't want to go to sleep or have the judges go to sleep when they read these. So the basis for our topics are always going to be some sort of creativeness. I want some creative writing from the kids. And it's always going to be based on that. I want them to think about what they're going to do in the future. I want them to think about what they're going to go to college for, why they're going. I mean, you know, being there and going through it, if you go in with a plan, it makes it a heck of a lot easier and quicker to get out.
Yeah, sure does. We've opened up the lines at 866-666-7926. That's 866-666-7926 if anyone wants to call in and chat with Dale. Dale, who judges and how many judges are there?
Judges I basically handpick from people I meet through Blind My Smart. Customers that purchase, you know, large quantities, I figure they're helping fund a lot of the scholarship, so they should have a say in judging and you know, in helping us pick who gets the scholarships.
Oh, that's a wonderful
idea.
So
I offer invitations out to them first, and then there's various people I've met through, you know, just through doing Blind My Smart, be it people that call, interesting folks. Just recently I met a guy, Robert, the Big Cat, and he owns his own radio station up in Ohio, I believe it is. So he found out about us, and he's made a couple purchases from us, but now I tune him in on the Internet sometimes, Power Radio 104.
Well, that's very cool. Hey,
but it's real cool, and I'm like, wow, you know, and it's weird because just prior to that, there was a guy that we were at the I with. And he was wanting to find out about how he could start being a DJ and being on the air somewhere or get his own Internet station. And I was like, man, I told Robert, I go, I got to hook you up with Dave, and you guys need to rap and see what can be done. And last time I spoke to Dave, they've been talking.
Oh, very cool.
So it's just, you know, it's information and just getting people together. But, yeah, it's cool.
That's very cool.
What I do is once I get the essays, all the essays are submitted in an electronic format. Either emailed to me or sent mailed on a floppy disk or on a CD. And then from there, I email all the essays out to the judges. And they score them in three categories based upon three different, you know, creativity, their overall impression of the student from the essay, and, you know, grammar and spelling and all that critical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
They send their scores back to me. I tally them up. And, you know, last year, the kid that won had a half a point more than the second place kid.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
So I was like, you know, that is, I was really happy at that point that we had three equal value scholarships.
Yeah, we've got a call. Let's bring them in. Hi there, you're with Dale and Marlena. Who's this?
It's Kelly Sapergia.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi. How are you tonight?
Great. Did you have a question for Dale?
Yeah, actually, first I just wanted to say that I've been very impressed with your Cooking in the Dark there, Dale, and I understand that next week the program is going to be airing on VoicePrint.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So
that is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
We've been slowly but surely expanding the different reading radio services that are running us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for us. I was asking Tim, I go, how many do you send the show out to now? And he was trying to keep up. He didn't know. He had to go look. Before it was easy, too. Houston and ACB.
How are you? Well, I...
Now, yeah, see, Marlena, we've got enough listeners where Cheryl and I both have to use our fingers and toes to count.
There you
now.
Go. Pretty soon you're going to make me start counting.
I know it. I know it.
I remember when I got that email from VoicePrint, and I was very, very happy to... make that connection. And VoicePrint asked us, you know, can we air it? And I said, by golly, far as I'm concerned, you can. We don't own it. We just air it because they graciously allow us to. And so we hooked VoicePrint, which for folks who don't know what VoicePrint is, that's the Canadian radio reading service. And so we hooked VoicePrint up with Dale, and now here we go. That's great.
That's it. And you guys are getting the goods because we just started recording using Skype today. We finally got all the bugs out of it. So the shows you guys will be getting won't be those old ones through the telephone lines with Tim cranking me up and pushing Cheryl down. And it's going to be great. But we do what we did today that will be running will be a show with a couple little dishes, the little just favorites that just hit the spot when I was up there at Club C&I. And one was, they were both so simple, scrambled eggs with cheese served on a toasted onion bun.
Oh, yum, I'm there.
Oh, my gosh, I was like, oh, I need seconds, please. And, you know, the other was one of those bitterly cold days when I was wondering, like, what am I doing up here? You know, I'm from Texas. It's in the 80s down home, and I'm up here, you know, in snow and ice. And it was a grilled cheese sandwich.
Oh, yum.
Just the grilled cheese and tomato soup. Now, I didn't make the tomato soup, but we did the grilled cheese a couple different ways, too.
Oh, yum.
But we're trying to slow the shows down so we can help teach as we do the shows, too, to let y'all know what I'm doing, what techniques I'm doing. You know, Tim graciously, thank goodness, he edits the shows, so, you know.
I was just going to say, I was very impressed with the one that you did, I think it was a couple months ago on the Hamilton Beach Grill. That was a really good one.
Oh, yeah. Do you have a Hamilton Beach or a George Foreman?
Hamilton Beach.
It doesn't have the
timer or anything. It just has the temperature gauge.
Okay.
But I really like it. In fact, I think it's better than the George Foreman in a way.
See, I am in agreement with you. And I don't want to make George mad because he lives here in Houston, too. He'll be knocking on my door. Blind guy can't see him coming, man.
Well, George... George,
yeah,
I have
could.
Your
There'd
grill.
There'd be a huge shadow across my path. It'd be, oh, it's George.
Well, George need not be upset. I have his grill.
And but, I mean, the way the Hamilton Beach is made, it's just with the grease trap kind of contained inside the grill. Because I don't know about you, but I had that George Foreman, and I sent that grease tray flying many a time accidentally. Yeah, or just tip it over or something, cool. But they're great little gadgets. Now, Kelly, does yours have the griddle plates as well as the grill plates, or is it just the grill plates?
I think it's just the grill plates. You can't remove them at any rate.
Okay.
Which
yeah, they are fantastic.
Of,
I mean, from everything. Bacon-wrapped shrimp, those are delicious. Steaks are great on it. Chicken breast, portobello mushrooms, shish kebabs.
Mm.
I've got a buddy that does, he does eggs on them.
Oh, yeah.
He kind of tilts it up so it won't run, you know, it won't run into the grease trap and breaks an egg out of them. I'm like, Rusty. I mean, he's 45, and, you know, he should still be in college.
It's pretty good. I must admit, I made a chicken burger on it the other day, and it was really good.
And so easy to use, you know? Now, I mean, you don't even have to have it doesn't even have to be thawed out.
Mm-hmm.
I've even done breakfast sausage on mine, you know?
Yeah.
Which just works out great. But, hey, Kelly, I appreciate, thanks for the kudos, man. That makes all the work worthwhile. Because I know I needed to go to the store like a week ago, and I finally went last night because I had to do the shows today.
I'm glad somebody else does that. Hey, Kelly, thanks so much for the call.
Actually, I just had a question there for Dale.
All right, real quick.
Okay. I was just wondering, how did you get into cooking? I mean, was it something you were interested in when you were sighted, or how did that come
out? Yeah, I mean, as a sighted person, I was a bachelor. I mean, when I had the car wreck, I was single and, man, had a place out in the country and come home and throw something on the grill or, you know, I mean, yeah, and it's not really a culinary desire. You know, I don't really care about that, but what I do know is what is good and how to do it. And then after the accident, I mean, that was one of the first things I wanted to learn to do again. For me, it was my steps back towards independence. you know?
Yeah.
I had cooked, you know, done the Hungry Man's until I was sick of them. And then I ordered those crazy bags off the TV that you see that where, you know, with the lining in them, you can cook anything in the microwave in these bags.
Right.
Yeah, they work.
Yeah.
But I'm like, man, I got to do something else. Yeah. So slowly but surely I got back into that. And then the opportunity arose where I was given the chance to start doing a, you know, to do a cooking show. And Phil Parr, you know, the blind handyman, is who gave me the opportunity. And when they called us up to do it, he was under the impression we were just going to sit around and be boring and, you know, talk about recipes and techniques and stuff. And I was like, man, let's rock and roll. And he goes, what, you're cooking? I said, let's go.
That's great. You've got another call. Let's bring him on in. Hi there. You're with Marlena and Dale. Who's this?
Hey, Marlena, Dale. This is Marvin Rush in sort of somewhat windy Fort Worth.
Uh-oh.
Marvin, you guys got hammered yesterday, didn't you?
Yes. Friday, we got hammered pretty good.
Man. Now, my brother's up there near your neck of the woods. He went up there for the race this weekend.
Well, then he's 10 miles from the house here then, so tell him to duck.
Man, I should have gave him your number. He could have went over there and you could have fed him.
That, I'd probably crank the grill up or something, you know.
He would have liked that. The whole time I kept telling his wife,
tight.
I was like, you sure y'all aren't feuding? You sure you're not mad at him? Don't need me to go in your place?
Do you use a charcoal grill, which I do? Or do you prefer gas grill? I've had two or three of each and seem like I go back to a charcoal grill every time I have a choice. In fact, I just got one of those, and you're probably familiar with them being in Texas. They're called Grills for Life. They're made out of that, big old oil field.
Yeah, pipe. The big old oil drum.
Yeah.
Okay, Marvin, I'm going to let Dale answer on the radio because I know he's going to be a popular guest.
Yep, have a great one.
All right,
thanks,
give my love to Lori.
I'll do it.
All right. Yeah.
When it comes to the grills, whether it be gas or charcoal, it's really personal preference. Some people don't like the taste, they say, that they get off a gas grill. They like the taste from the charcoal grill. And to me, it's half a dozen one or the other. When I use a gas grill. But
yeah,
when I do
too.
Use it, I have a little wood box in it that I put some mesquite or something in so I can still get that smoky flavor.
Sure, sure.
One of the problems I had with the charcoal grill that I didn't like was, it seemed to me, and maybe I was just more sensitive to it, was a lighter fluid taste.
Yes, I agree with you 150%. Yes. Yeah.
I couldn't get that taste out. Now, I do know some people, like I've got a buddy of mine, that he fires his pit up, and he just uses a little bit of charcoal to get a little fire going, and then he puts real wood in there.
Oh, that would be good.
And then that's how he grills, is over real wood. So, you know, that he's got the ability to do that. I don't.
Yeah.
But I just like the gas. I like the ability to control the heat a little bit.
I think,
able to put the wood chips in.
And I think the heat's more even, too, on a gas.
Yes. Now, once you get good at using the charcoal, man.
Yeah,
you can definitely, you know, get a pretty even heat that way. But, and again, too, if you're doing something for a long time, you don't have to go back and continually add more charcoal and stuff.
That's right.
Yeah, definitely that heat gets uneven and it can get kind of crazy.
Well, you've got another call, Mr. Popular. Let's bring him on in. We are just taking him right, left, and center here.
Come on down.
Hi there, you're with Dale and Marlena. Who's this?
Hello, this is George Wirtzel, Michigan.
Oh, George, my buddy. How are you?
I'm getting to be a hog on your show.
I love it. You can call my show anytime. Dale, this is the most incredible guy. The two of you together could move mountains.
I wanted to tell Dale that I run a camp for kids to start with here in Michigan. And 2 years ago, we built a outdoor wood-fired adobe oven.
Cool.
From scratch with all the kids. Made up the, they call it cob when you put it into an oven, but it's basically adobe.
Right.
And we can get that sucker up to about 600 degrees.
Wow.
And we've been doing a lot of pizzas and stuff in it.
Yes, I was just going to ask you if you do pizzas in it.
Pizzas and bake a lot of bread.
Right.
And I would like to extend a challenge to you sometime to come up and do your cooking show at the camp with a bunch of kids during the summer.
That would be great.
And, Dale, this guy would make a fabulous guest on your show.
fantastic.
Not only is he a gourmet cook, he's totally blind. He's a licensed builder. He's a, I mean, I had him on my show, what, 2 weeks ago, was it, George? Three weeks ago?
Yep.
And my archives aren't up to date yet, but they're getting there. And when they do, Dale, I will let you know, and I'll let you know which show it is. You need to listen to that show.
That
George
would be awesome.
George is incredibly cool.
You know, you can write me at either dale@blindmysmart.com and zap me your phone number, and I'll give you a ring, and let's talk.
Okay.
I think it'd be great if I can't get up there. I know I can't get up there this summer.
Yeah.
I mean, summer's already booked.
I'm really worried about your blind mice, Bart. I keep hearing all these things on the news all the time that they're curing the vision and blind mice.
Do what now?
They're curing the vision in blind mice.
I know. But they're not curing it in tailless blind mice.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah,
there
those crazy mice. I got back there. I had to take their tails away. They didn't do nothing. They left me a whole bunch to do, but yeah.
Pleasure talking
to you. That's good, George. I like that. Yeah, get in touch with me, and if anything else, I wouldn't mind maybe one time when we could do a show with you guys doing your pizza in the oven.
Okay, we can do that.
That would be awesome,
because
nothing like a pizza coming out of a wood-burning oven like that.
And then I want to be there to eat the pizza.
There you go. Come on down.
I know.
Yeah.
I put you guys together. I got to get something out of this.
Are you like Domino's? Do you deliver?
Guide Dog Express.
There you go. Well, my guide dog just came over and said, I'll go get it, Mom. Tell me where to go. All right, George, you take care.
Thanks, George.
Always wonderful to hear from you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926 is the telephone number to chat with Dale. Can you stay with us more than an hour, or what's your deal? Of course. I wanted to go back to the scholarships and ask you a question, but it just went out of my head. What on earth?
Hold your tongue out. Maybe I can read it.
All right.
Oh, no.
Get your fingers off my tongue.
Yeah, hey. Brailing that tongue. Hey. Sugar sweet.
Oh, my gosh. How long have you been doing the scholarships, Dale?
The scholarships we've been doing, we gave away our first ones. One, two. Gosh, this will be the fourth year we've given them out. The first year, we didn't have any money. We were in the red. And actually, the second year, I had about $150 in the bank to give to the kids. So I pitched in $250, and Ann Morris donated $500.
Oh, that was
so
nice.
We had $900 to give away that year.
That's a significant amount.
It's a lot.
Now,
we gave away three scholarships, the highest one being $350. And my ultimate goal with this is to get up to the point where maybe we can do four-year rides. We've also looked at the last board of directors meeting we had. We kind of discussed even giving away computers, you know, laptops,
mm-hmm.
JAWS or something,
mm-hmm.
all ready to go, or WindowEyes, something
mm-hmm.
like that with some sort of adaptive on it,
mm-hmm.
for them to take to college with them. And I'm thinking if we can get that, those might be more useful than, you know, a couple semesters of college getting paid for.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, it's a catch-22. If you don't have semesters paid for, then you're not going.
True.
So it's kind of crazy. Now, the other thing that's kind of strange, in talking to a lot of organizations and things, kids, I'm talking to y'all, is how many scholarships go unclaimed.
Wow.
And,
really?
And there's different state organizations, you know, the ACB and the NFB in different states that usually have scholarships
mm-hmm.
available, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of times those go unclaimed. And it's just crazy. 2 years ago, two of ours went unclaimed. And at that point, we started circling the horses thinking, what are we doing here? You know, why are we putting in these 12 and 15-hour days for nothing? And I'll be honest with y'all. Boy, I'll tell you, come about January, this big cheese mouse dude is tired. I'm pooped. And there's been a couple times I thought, man, I'm just going to hang up the ears and walk away. But then February 2nd rolls around, and that's when we open the scholarships up. And I start getting excited again. And then some of the essays start coming in, and, man, I'm fueled. I'm ready to rock and roll. Let's do it again. Because it's so cool to read the essays and to read the kids and just meet them and get to know them a little bit. and step inside them. One of our winners last year, bless her heart, she, you know, got some other complications besides just blindness. Didn't finish high school, but she went back and got her GED. And she knows how important an education is, so she's working to get that college degree. And, you know, it's people like that, kids like that, that, man, I wish that my pockets were deep. I wish I had Rockefeller or Bill Gates pockets, you know.
Yeah,
and we'd give all the kids a ride.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm kind of, you know, I kind of think the best way to improve our future is to improve it through the next generation. You know, get more blind folks educated, get them out there in the world in professional jobs, to where we're going to be in contact with the sighted public, and then maybe they'll quit putting Braille signs on the back wall of a restroom and saying that's reasonable accommodation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, maybe we'll get a bus driver that can, what, first of all, speak English, or maybe they'll get talking buses finally, or, you know, or some, I mean, just better, they'll rise up and, oh, there is a need for this. You know, we do need to make amends. We need to quit letting scraping the bottom of the barrel for these folks.
You know, I have a question, and this question may not be well thought out because it just occurred to me. I wonder if you would ever be interested in fostering a scholarship that would somehow or other promote the use of Braille with our younger folks. So many of these kids, Dale, and you know this, but
yes.
Ronnie Millsap and I talk about this almost every time we speak, and it just disturbs us both greatly that so many of these kids think, well, I don't have to know Braille because I have my talking computer. I have my cassette recorder. And Ronnie has the same philosophy that I have, which is essentially, if you don't have any Braille skills at all, you can't read and write. You can't
label things.
You can't. And I'm not saying that.
Well, and, you know, that's interesting because Candace asks me that all the time. Like when, you know, we'll get a check from somebody, or somebody will write a note or something. And you know, because with her being an educator, too, she's curious about that. And I've often asked folks that have been blind all their life, when somebody says the letter A or the letter C or whatever, what do you see?
Yeah.
Do you see the letter in script? Do you see it in print? Or do you see it in Braille?
I see it in Braille.
See? Exactly.
Exactly.
I see it both ways.
Yeah. I mean, and I do know print, because I'm an old lady and I have a beloved Opticon, which you may not even know what that is.
Yes, I do know what that is.
Okay. Well, and that really forced me to learn print back in the 70s. So I, you know, but my primary medium for learning is Braille. My primary medium for enjoyment is audio.
Yes.
But I don't know.
But you're right. I mean, if you don't know Braille or have a means of writing and being able to go back and see what you've written, I mean, what kind of speller or that's something that comes into my head.
Yeah.
Is spelling and grammar and I mean, you can listen to the written, and I know this for a fact, since I've lost my sight, my spelling has diminished greatly.
Sure. Yeah.
Because I don't physically see the words all the time.
You don't see the words. That's right.
And me, I'm the worst example for a Braille person because I can maybe count to 10. I mean, I know the Braille code. I mean, I memorized that and part of grade 2. I mean, I memorized grade 2, but I just didn't use it.
Yeah.
I got impatient trying to teach my fingers to feel the bumps.
Sure.
And now I go back and I will. I mean, I've got a deck of Braille cards now. And I'm starting there, and by gosh, I'm going to be able to identify those cards in a split second so that Skylar and I can play cards together.
Yeah, that's a really good point. If you don't have Braille, how do you interact with your kids if you want to play a board game or Scrabble or, yeah.
I mean, that's one of the things that just is, that's something I've got to start getting back on the ball with and start learning again.
Well, I'll keep on your tail about it.
Good.
Mr. Blind
and
Mice.
You know what? Let's brainstorm on that a little bit because that would be great.
Yeah, and we're going to be beginning in the future, not too distant future, I hope, to do some specific programming. I don't want to give too much away here because we're still sort of negotiating things, but we're going to be beginning to do some specific programming dealing with Braille literacy. So we might be able to kind of roll some of this into some of that.
Yes, that would
be
awesome.
Good.
Because I know now, for me, when we do the cooking show, I used to either have to memorize the recipes.
Oh, gosh.
Or I would put them in my ear with a little,
voice
recorder.
Yeah, yeah.
But now with Cheryl, I've even gotten more lazier because now I send the recipes to her and she reads them.
And she reads them in Braille.
Yes.
Yeah, of course, because she
does. Yes, she Brailles them out and reads them in Braille.
Yeah.
So, and that has been one of our better selling items at Blind Mice is the Braille cookbook.
I know, I've bought a bunch of them.
Yes, you did. And they're on sale again.
They're great. I have to go back and see what ones I don't have.
We're going to be expanding to knitting and crocheting books as well.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Let me just give out the phone number again. It's 866-666-7926. The line is open, and it got very quiet. I don't know. I don't know what George Wurtzel did. Let's blame it on George.
He jammed the line.
That's right. He said, well, I got through now. No one else needs
That's
to call.
That's right.
You know, I want to go back to your story again, and we kind of skipped over what I suspect is a big piece of who you are. How did you meet Candace and Skylar?
They moved in across the street from me. Where we lived in townhomes, and we all shared a common drive, if you will, a road that led up to the driveways of all of our garage doors and stuff. And when anybody new would move in, it was kind of a T-shaped road. And, surrounded on all sides by townhomes. There was like 16 of them, I believe, in that little concourse. And when anybody new would move in, I would go down and introduce myself and Kelsey and just let them know Kelsey's a seeing eye dog. Cause at 100 pounds, he's a big boy, and he can kind of scare the heck out of you sometimes. But also just to let them identify with us and let, if I'm standing in the road, hang on.
Don't run me over.
Get out of your way. Give me a second, I may not know I'm in the road, but so she moved in across the street, and I walked over and introduced myself, and we met and started talking. And one of their first nights there, I called and had some dinner delivered. And, we got to know each other and had a couple bottles of wine and just talked. And then a few weeks later, we went out on a date, and a few weeks after, about 2 months after that, I proposed, and about 4 or 5 months after that, we got married.
Oh, that's great. And we do have a call. I'll bring them in just a second. But one of the things that I most remember is last year on your anniversary, I think I had you on the show, and you made a comment that just absolutely struck me. You said, or no, it was the anniversary on which you proposed. And
yes.
You said, this is the whatever it was, anniversary of the day that I proposed to Candace and Skylar. And I thought that was such a beautiful way to put it. So
yes, November the 19th.
Yeah, I just remembered that.
I mean, I asked Mom to marry me, and then I had a ring made for Skylar, too.
Oh, that's nice.
And at the wedding, when we got married, I even gave the preacher, he wasn't really a preacher, I guess. We found him on weddingsperform.com. But the ordained person, I guess. I gave him some little things, and I had some vows for Skylar, too, and I gave her a wedding ring. Because I was, I'm marrying both of them in my mind's eye.
Yeah.
It's a big step, and I wanted to let her know that
she's
just because
important.
Mom and I were married, she was still a part of us, too.
Let's bring the call in. Hi there, you're with Dale and Marlena. Who's this?
Hi, Dale and Marlena. This is Lisa in Cincinnati.
Not San Antonio anymore, Lisa.
<I know>.
Girl, what are you doing in Cincinnati?
I tell you what, it would be really exciting if we ever come up with a Braille literacy program, because I've been thinking about maybe doing a podcast one of these days in reference to Braille, because I don't think there's anybody that talks about Braille as much as I love to.
No. And there are, the advocacy for Braille is dwindling. The readership of it is definitely dwindling. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are now, but it seems like when I was learning it, and I was totally shocked to hear this, but it seemed like it was less than 9% of blind people use Braille.
About 10%. That's pretty close.
Is it?
I have been thinking about doing one. I just haven't had the right recorder to do it yet. because that's one of the things I have hope to do and create opportunities for sighted people to learn Braille, you know, the audio recording.
Oh, that would be awesome.
And so that's one of the things I have been thinking about doing.
Well, in fact, the gentleman that taught me Braille in San Antonio at the Lighthouse, gosh, George, I think, was his name.
Yeah.
He would make his grocery list out in Braille.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And go to the grocery store and, you know, and yeah. Away you'd go.
Yeah, a lot of practical uses for doing uses for Braille. There's a lot of practical things to do with it.
And, you know, I think that with the, I mean, just coming from CSUN and looking at the Braille display wars that are going on now, I actually think that we're going to see a rise in Braille literacy and usage due to the technology. I mean, I saw HumanWare, for example, has a little Braille display that is 12 cells long.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you say, well, what am I going to do with 12 cells?
Mm-hmm.
It's meant to work in conjunction with your mobile phone
right.
to give you Braille output,
right.
if you have a PDA, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so Braille is no longer this big, bulky dinosaur of an animal. It can be simple.
And like you said, technology is going to bring that back, the cost effectiveness for a school. I know now, like, when I go talk to the Pasadena School District or the Deer Park School District, they have the ability now to produce Braille documents right there in the school.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And that is something that is huge. Now, another story I read, which just infuriated me, and I wanted to go find somebody and discuss it with them, was how a VI teacher in West Virginia, I believe it was, was teaching her student Braille because this little girl had a little usable vision.
Mm-hmm.
She was teaching with putting dots on a paper with a pen.
Oh,
with a pencil.
My gosh.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like,
hung.
You know, that these people totally do not even understand.
Yeah.
I mean, the hardest part of learning Braille is not the dot patterns.
No.
It's
getting
them.
Your fingers
yeah.
trained
feeling
to feel those
it
crazy
is
dots.
What seems to be, if I'm talking with several different people, seems to be the biggest problem is the sensitivity in the fingers.
Yes.
Not so much memorizing the 189 contractions and memorizing the dot patterns and learning the proper way to write
it's the
code.
Actual, it's the actual,
mm-hmm.
oh, the word escapes me, but it's the actual tactile identification.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right.
That's where the biggest hurdle is.
I mean, that's what frustrated me, because I was all excited, man. They said, you need to pick a, you know, pick a magazine out of this list, and
mm-hmm.
they were reading them off to me. Oh, Playboy. Okay.
you know, and if a person's fingers are real, real rough, that's going to be a problem.
Yes. And the neuropathy issue comes up, too.
Right, mm-hmm.
And then the other big obstacle I see as a lot of baby boomers start losing it, losing their vision, that is, there's that reluctance to learn Braille.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't think they need it.
Right, they don't think they need it, you know.
But,
yeah,
I mean, unfortunately, it's going to be the youngsters, the kids that are blind from birth or lose their sight at a young age and are coming up. And speaking of blind kids, I'm going to tell you all a joke that Candace has. She teaches first grade.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got a little VI student in her class.
Mm-hmm.
This little girl is a hoot. She's a hoot. Mm-hmm. But she told a joke to him the other day. What'd the apple say to the banana?
What?
Take me to Palais Royal and buy me a sweater.
I tell you what, if we did not have the Braille system, I don't know what I'd do without it.
Yeah.
No.
It is the best source for proofreading material. Because I do proofreading every day at work.
Well,
if you don't have Braille skills, you better have a lot of money.
Yeah, because you got to pay somebody to read to you.
That's right.
Or pay for that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's other options, but you better have the money.
All right,
because
Lisa.
It's all expensive.
Thanks so much, Lisa.
No problem.
Okay, have a good
day. Hey, stay warm up there in Cincinnati, Lisa.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, this morning I was waiting in the Sacramento airport, and I'm fortunate to have a Braille Note PK. And so I had like almost a two-hour wait, and I haven't had much sleep the night before, which is why I'm sounding kind of blah tonight. But I thought, all right, if I fall asleep now, I'm just going to be awful getting on this flight. So let me see if there's wireless. Well, thank heavens, there was free wireless in the airport. So I went to the Seattle Times, and I read the newspaper sitting
all
there,
right,
reading in Braille, just clicking along, clicking along,
right,
clicking along. And, you know, yes, I could have put headphones on and listened to synthetic speech to do that. I could have done, but I probably would have fallen asleep anyway.
Yes.
And I sat there thinking, thank God I know Braille. You
yes
know, I really, it just, so I would love to talk with you about this because, it's certainly an agenda item on both national organizations, ACB and NFB, to increase Braille literacy. AFB is on the same page.
Yes.
And, you know, somehow we need to reach out to some of these VI teachers and say, look, you've got to stay proficient. You've got to keep those Braille
skills.
Well,
and I'm going to tell on myself, but I received a letter in Braille. I had no idea which way was up. So Candace took it in, and the VI teacher there read it, and it turned out it was from some guy in Africa that was an orphan, and he was 27, and he didn't have a cloth to cover himself with, and
oh,
a window
dear
in his hut, and he
oh
was eating grass and grubs, and basically he wanted my oldest daughter to marry. So that's our joke now. We're sending Skylar, you know. But, I mean, there was such humor in that letter, and I had to wait for somebody else to transcribe it for
yeah
me.
Yeah, yeah.
But my Braille skills are terrible, and it's simply because I just did not take the time and have not taken the time and had the patience to train my fingers to feel those dots.
Sure, yeah.
Jumbo Braille, that might be a better answer at the beginning for me, but I don't know how the transition is from that to regular.
Well, you know, when I was a child and I learned Braille at age 6, of course, I had a wonderful, wonderful teacher, and I was very fortunate to be in a pilot program to study how effectively blind children could be educated in public schools.
Right.
And we do have another call, so we're just going to put them on hold here for a sec, okay? And so we would spend, as we little ones, you know, first and second grade, we would spend most of the day with, we called them Braille teachers, because, you know, nobody's ever going to teach me vision, doggone it. I don't know why they keep calling them vision teachers. But anyway, I ain't never going to learn no vision. no matter how hard I try.
Don't you know what sound red makes?
Yeah, right.
Oh, I love it. That's
oh
great.
Oh, gosh. But so anyway, we would spend most of the day in first and second grade with the Braille teacher, and she started teaching us our blindness skills as we little kids. And when I was first introduced to Braille, I was given not a book, not a paper with Braille on it, but index cards, and she had gotten poker chips, and she glued the poker chips onto the cards in the dot patterns of letters.
Okay.
And so first you started feeling the big poker chips.
And, right.
And then after you could identify, and we did three letters at a time, I think, you know, like A, B, C, you know.
Right.
And once you could identify them on the card, then she immediately switched to real Braille on cards. And you would feel the A and the B and the C. And it was one letter per card. And I remember learning it that way. And I think that might be a system somebody ought to resurrect to teach
that
Braille.
That is a great idea.
Yeah.
Now, I learned it with little wiffle ball golf balls.
Oh, yeah.
And egg cards.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's,
you know,
that's another
stick
great
card,
idea.
You know, half
sure
a dozen egg cards.
Sure.
But
yeah, yeah.
Gosh, if yeah we're all just that big. Because if somebody will tell me the dot pattern, I can tell you what it says.
Yeah, but imagine how big books would be. let's bring our caller in. They've been very patiently waiting.
They come from Texas. You know?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Hi there, caller. You're with Dale and Marlena. Who's this?
Marlena?
Yes.
Hi, this is Dan from Michigan.
Hi, Dan. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you and Dale?
Oh, I'm great. How are you, Dale?
Dale's great. It's 85 degrees in Texas finally again, and
let
I'm
me
happy.
Let me make this kind of quick. Two things, Marlena. First, I'm really glad you brought up this discussion about Braille. Fortunately for me, I learned Braille when I was in first grade. And so I've been reading Braille all my life. And it got depressing at the point where I used to work for Internal Revenue Service. And towards the end of my career, they were trying to get rid of Braille because they had the common excuse that it takes up a lot of room. And I don't care what anybody says about computers or a Braille display. There's nothing like having a hard copy of a book physically in front of you that you can go to the table of contents or the index if you're looking for something and you see the page number and you can flip right to it.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're working for Internal Revenue or any type of customer service job, you want to be able to get the information quickly. But also, as a side note, Marlena, you mentioned that you had you have a Braille note, and you were able to read the newspaper with the Braille note. I also have a Braille note, the Empire. But I still get that nagging feeling of desire to just get a book. There's still nothing like having a physical book that you can open up and just read. You know, you have all these books in Braille, and it's, you know, and I like doing that. It's nice having the books in Braille. But I do miss the actual physical book, picking it up, reading it, you know, sitting in a car, on the bed, on the bus, you know, and just reading an actual physical
book.
Yeah,
turning the pages, yeah.
Real quickly, the other thing is, I sent you an email. You've seen my email under a different name, don't say
yes,
it.
Yes.
Okay.
I know exactly who you are.
Okay, yeah, I still want to get together with you on that.
Yeah, and, you know, I had to leave for Sacramento this week and get the California Council of the Blind Convention streamed, and so I am, like, so far behind with life. It's but you are a very kind and generous person. And,
oh, sure.
Definitely. I will be back in touch with you.
Okay, yeah. Feel free to call me or send me an email, and we'll... I'm going to be moving to Birmingham, actually.
Birmingham? What are you going to do in Birmingham?
Oh, don't ask me. No, my wife is starting her internship in Birmingham at the VA.
Oh. What kind of internship?
Strangely enough, she's going into blind rehab.
Really? So she'll probably be working with Lynn Settle.
Lynn Settle?
Lynn Heddle. Yeah.
I don't know the name.
You will.
Okay. But yeah, she had to learn Braille, and it was challenging for her to learn it. It just amazes me that they expect the students to learn all this Braille in so short of a time period.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's really not fair, because I love Braille, and I hope it never goes away. And I'm just a big proponent of Braille.
Braille is not going to go away now, because Dale and Marlena are on the case.
We are on the Braille trail, baby.
That's right.
Yes,
so
I wanted to call and say hi and thank you for bringing up that discussion.
Sure.
And also just let you know who I am.
Yep.
So you can match me with the email.
Yep. And tell your wife when she gets to Birmingham and she meets Lynn Heddle. Tell her that, tell her to tell Lynn that she knows Marlena.
Oh, she knows Marlena. Okay.
Yep. Lynn's a great person. She is a Braille advocate to the teeth.
All right.
So, yeah. All right,
okay.
Dan.
So take care, and I'll call in the show again.
Oh, please do.
Get back to me when you are able to, and we'll go from there.
All righty. Sounds like a plan.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
866-666-7926. Hey, let's talk about some... Oh, excuse me. My voice is cracking. Oh, wait. Before I do that, let me just say that if you are listening to this program at any time other than 7 Pacific, 10 Eastern on a Sunday night in North America, or 2 Universal on a UTC Monday morning, it's repeat. So just put your feet up and enjoy. And we are also being heard on W TND LP Macomb. So we're very grateful to be there as well. And before we get off the topic of Braille, I want to lay one statistic on you, and then I want to talk about recipes, because I can't have you on here and not talk about our favorite topic besides Braille, which is eating. I recently heard a statistic dealing with Braille literacy that said that while perhaps only 10% of the total blind population are Braille users, which is sad indeed, of that 10%, 90% are employed. Now, what does that tell you?
That is a cool stat, isn't
it? Yeah, isn't that great?
That is awesome.
So you want to get a job, learn some Braille. It's that simple.
And again, it gets back to being able to find information, reference it quickly, and move on.
Yep.
I mean, recently we just got in, we started carrying that new talking Bible.
Ah, yeah.
Which is great because it's so small and compact, but if you need to move forward or backwards to find something, it takes a little while. You just can't flip through the book.
Yeah. We have a call. I'm going to bring them in 1 second. I spent close to 11 years as an assistant to the county manager in a county in Northern Virginia, and I had to do a lot of work with citizens face-to-face. They didn't know I was blind, you know, and I'd come out with a guide dog. And, you know, I didn't want that clickety-clackety Braille writer. I did everything on a slate and stylus, everything, for 11 years, everything.
Wow.
So, hey, we have a call. Let's bring him in.
Cool.
Hi there. You're with Dale and Marlena.
Hi, Marlena. This is Kenny.
Hi, Kenny.
I just like to tell you guys, I like reading Braille a whole lot. I read books off of web Braille on my Braille light now. So I think Braille is more important than hearing synthetic speeches.
Well, that's good. And, you know, everybody who has called tonight and says how much they love Braille, I'm going to challenge you to spread that word to younger blind people. Do, you know, be advocates for this stuff, guys. All right. Thanks, Kenny.
You're welcome.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, Kenny.
Bye-bye.
All right. Folks can still call in about Braille if you like, but that's fine. We'll take your call at 866-666-7926, but I'm ready to talk about food. Talk to me, Dale. Talk to me.
Some cooking, huh, baby? Cooking.
Baby, let's go.
Man, it was tough getting back in the kitchen, let me tell you that.
I bet.
You know, up there at Club C&I, all them meals prepared for you and served and desserts, and I think I gained about 10 pounds up there.
I bet.
Now, the key when you go, if you go to the C&I to get a dog guide, the key is get in good with the housekeeping staff, and they'll bring you seconds. Oh, goodness gracious. Well, let's see here. Did we disclose the peanut butter cookie recipe? I think we disclosed that last time.
No, we didn't, but before we do it, we have another call.
All right.
Hang on. We'll bring them on in. Hi there. You're with Dale and Marlena. Who's this?
Well, good evening.
Oh, my gosh. It's Stan, the man from Oregon. I haven't talked to you for 2 weeks. My life's been incomplete.
Okay.
Okay.
I got to tell you, I have been, you know, you talk about recipes. I did an experiment the other day. And as you know, you and I have the same pressure cooker,
yes, and I almost have that instruction book done.
And you know what I did?
Yeah.
I did an experiment and did of all sort of a cobbler slash cake in
Ooh.
There.
Oh, in the pressure cooker?
Yes.
All right.
And what I did is I decided, okay, I'll get some peaches, and I got a, you know, regular white cake mix because I had several things to do, and I was, you know, strapped on time, and I did it and put it to...
So wait, what'd you do? You did
what I did was I put the peaches on the bottom.
It. Yeah. Now, were these canned peaches?
Yeah.
Did you put the liquid, too?
Of course.
Okay. All right. Well, we got to have the facts,
I know. And what I did was I mixed the mix up and added an egg or so to it and some oil and mixed it all up and put it emptied the contents after me. I had a mixing bowl, emptied the contents into the nonstick surface of the pressure cooker.
Yes, the Cook's Essential Pressure Cooker from QVC.
And set for about 45 minutes.
Wow, in a pressure cooker, 45
minutes? Well,
actually,
minutes? It was probably could have done it for a lot less, but it was like woo-hoo. It was like a slow on the slow setting.
Oh, okay.
So how'd it come out?
Oh, it came out nice and beautiful, all fluffy.
All right.
Wow.
So when you say it could have, how much, if you were going to do it again, what would you lower the time to?
I would probably do it for about, because, you know, these things are experimental, so I probably could have done it for about, really could have done it for about 10 minutes less.
Okay, so about 30, 35 minutes?
Yeah.
And for everybody listening, now, you mix the cake mix up according to the box directions?
Well, what I did, I just didn't even go by, you know, the box directions. What I did was added an egg and then got to mix a bowl with a lid on. They just mixed it up and just really mixed it up well.
Okay.
And add the egg and a little bit of oil.
About how much oil?
About a teaspoon.
Oh, okay. Not very much at all then.
Right.
Just a drop. A dab will do you.
Yeah.
Now, did you put any water in the cake mix, Stan?
You know what I did was I just let the liquid be the...
Yeah. Wow, yeah. That's it. So, okay, so
because
what...
Because there's quite a bit of liquid in those.
In those peaches, yeah. So what, so to reconstruct this, well, let me go back to the peaches. Did you use... Stan's going to be like, I'm going to hang up here.
No,
all right.
Did you use...
Well, we need to know, man.
Yeah, we need to know because I want
to
try it.
Everybody out there listens, yeah. Bust out those pressure cookers.
Yeah. Did you use diced peaches or sliced peaches?
In this case... They were the sliced ones.
Okay.
Okay.
So we take a can of sliced peaches, probably, what, a 15-ounce can?
Yeah,
somewhere 14-ounce
right, yeah.
can. And we put that in the bottom of our pressure cooker. Then we take a box of white cake mix.
Oh, and I forgot something. I added a little bit of vanilla.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Just a sprinkle.
Yes.
Okay. So into the mixing bowl, we put the box of white cake mix. We break an egg and beat it up a little bit so that we get it all ready. And we pour that over the cake mix. And then we put about...
Pour that over the peaches, yeah.
Oh, You pour the egg over the peaches?
Oh, no. The egg, I see what you said over the egg.
We're reconstructing. Gosh.
Rewind.
Yeah, bloop. Okay, so you break your egg and beat it up a little bit and then pour it over the cake mix. Then we take about a teaspoonful of oil and we put that into the mix. And then we sprinkle in some vanilla, maybe a teaspoon, do you suppose?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Then we mix all that up. Get it all nice and blended, and we slop it over the peaches. How do you like my technical terms there, Dale?
I love that.
Yeah, there you go. Slop it over the peaches. And if you have a regular pressure cooker, what are you recommending, Stan? 10 minutes, you're saying?
Is
y'all's pressure cooker, is it electric?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if we were on a stovetop, then we would want to go maybe on a medium heat?
Yeah, if you're going to have one of those antiquated stovetop ones, yeah.
Dale, you need to get one of these pressure cookers.
Oh, they're really
They're very...
Yeah, I'm still in the ice age.
No,
but
these...
see, what's nice about this one...
It's very accessible.
It's not only very accessible, but I don't know about Marlena's, but mine has this nice non-stick surface.
Oh, so does mine, yeah.
And in this case, it's like mine is a 6-quart capacity.
Okay.
And the only thing I will say is I think, you know, I did beans in it the other day, and I haven't figured out the way to get them the right way that I like, that you can in a crock pot.
Yeah.
That crock, I mean, that's kind of, see, that I find this recipe really cool because I do a similar one in a crock pot with a can of pie filling.
Yes.
You know, name your flavor. And then you cut in one stick of butter into the cake mix.
Oh.
And then you sprinkle it, because it comes out, you know, it's pretty crumbly. And then you dump that over the top of the pie filling and go on high in the crock pot for 2.5 hours.
Hey, Stan, you ought to try adding butter to your cake mix.
I did that the last time. I just didn't have butter this time. So
all right.
Now, which one came out better, the butter way or without the butter?
Everything comes out better with butter in it. Of course, the only other thing is I look like I've had too many things with butter in it.
Oh, we all do, Stan. We all do. But that makes us all the much more fun to hug.
That's right. Well, and crazy margarine, you don't want to use that nasty stuff.
No.
One molecule away from being plastic.
That's right.
The melting point, you know, the melting point I found out for that stuff is 117 degrees.
You're kidding.
Wow.
Now, I mean, I hate to say it, but if that ever melts out of your body, you got other things to worry about.
Yes, indeed.
Like, how's life on the sun?
Well, you know, Stan,
I'm going to have to check. I'm going to have to test drive that recipe, buddy.
But I'll tell you, it's a very nice kind of thing. And, of course, as I said, I'm not sure about – I'm going to still try again with beans in that pressure cooker. But I have the crock pot, and I think it's – I like beans better in the crock pot.
Now, see, I made a batch of navy beans couple of days ago and some homemade cornbread.
Mm.
And the navy beans I soaked for almost 2 days. And then when I was shopping last time, Takesha, the gal that was helping me shop, turned me on to, instead of the pork, the jowls or whatever you want to call it, being, you know, boned, she turned me on to some that were unboned, you know, no bones in them.
Right.
Which was cool. And I used that and, you know, cut up some, about an onion, diced up about 3 cloves of garlic, tossed that in, sautéed that a little bit, and then I think it was 2-3 cans of chicken broth.
Yeah.
And then in went the beans and, you know, the meat went in first and sautéed and kind of cooked up with the chicken broth and stuff. And I think you boiled that for a couple hours and then you put the beans in for about an hour and a half. So about the time the beans went in, I waited about 20 minutes and then popped the cornbread in and, man.
The thing I would have to say, though, you know, with beans, the ham hocks I like using, but the one thing I did a couple bean batches back was I used salt pork.
Okay.
Ooh, no, that drives you crazy.
Really?
It was just a little bit, I should have really rinsed it off more.
Okay.
Because that salt pork was just way too salty for me.
Right. Almost like you were using water out of the ocean or something. Huh?
Exactly, and I was like, whoa. I mean, I don't use much. I've got
been there, done that before. Put too much salt in potato soup, used all my potatoes in the soup. And, you know, the cure for that is to put more potatoes in.
You know, like
I was out. What do you do?
I say, I, you know, you learn from your mistakes, or at least hopefully you do. But I'll tell you, it's an experience when you do that. But it's always like when you make a mistake, you always, I don't know, I can't speak for everybody else, but I always like to see, okay, I've made this mistake. Let's see what I can do better next time.
Yeah. Well, and that's it. I mean, that's why when I tell folks, I mean, recipes, they're not blueprints. You know, you're not building a house or going to the moon or something. They're ideas.
I call it,
you know, unless you're baking. Now, if you're baking, you need to kind of follow that a little bit closer than if you're just freelancing on something. But, yeah, try that. Add some of this or add some of that, you know, and see how it comes out.
I call it a template.
It is.
You know,
it totally is.
Yeah.
And the important thing to do, like you just said, when you do that or when you deviate, is remember how you deviated.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that impressed me, Stan, was you said, you know, I did it for 45 minutes. A lot of people wouldn't have even remembered how long they did it for.
Well, see, I tried to, because, I mean, it was something where I really didn't have any blueprint to go by.
Right.
I had to just guess, you know, which way, and I said, well, if I make a mistake, I'll know better next time.
Exactly.
And so...
And, you know, it would seem to me that recipe, for people who don't have pressure cookers or crock pots or slow cookers, whatever, would seem to me that you could do that in the oven for maybe 35 minutes.
And you just get to that point where you know that, hey, this isn't going to be... Now, I'll tell you one thing I did correctly. Now, I did I got the chicken, and it was a cut-up chicken. And I did it for about a half hour in the pressure cooker.
And it was good.
and it was fall off the bone good.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm coming to your house.
Yeah.
All right, Stan, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Stan.
Sure. Talk to you later.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. What you got cooking there, baby?
Man, I tell you what we did. We made some guacamole today. Basically, it was gone before the rest of the entrees. We made cheese enchiladas for next week's show.
Ooh, that sounds good.
So we did those, and then we made some guacamole to go with it. We didn't do that on the air. We ran out of time. But Skylar is an avocado. She's an avocado kid.
Oh. Hey, you know what? We have another call.
All right.
We may never find out what you've got cooking.
That's right.
Isn't that great?
Don't have to listen to a show.
That's right. Isn't that great? All these people
love
you. Let's bring them on in. Hi there. You're with Dale and Marlena. Who's this?
Hello. This is Margaret Johnson. I want to say hi to Dale.
Hello,
hey, Margaret.
Margaret.
How are you?
Oh, I'm just fine. And I hate to break up a cooking show, but I didn't get to talk about Braille. And also, my computer's on a blink, and I've been having to listen to my daughter's laptop, and it was just laying on the table, and I told her, I said, just shut it off. I'm going to go try to call the show.
Well, you can talk about Braille. That's okay.
Well, I just wanted to, you know, bring up some things. For one thing, you know, I learned Braille about 10 years ago, and I really was dreading it because, now, Marlena, you may have heard all this, but I just tell everybody else in Radio Land or something, but I had grown up seeing people retained a whole year in school to learn Braille and hearing teachers say, you can read Braille and you can read print and you will have to have Braille, like it was a second class something. And the books were very dull looking to people that could see, you know, which now I've seen at the printing house where they have made the picture on the front of the Braille book like it is on the print book. I mean, it doesn't do Braille people any good, of course they still have the Braille up there, but the sighted teachers and the other kids that read print can see, oh, that's the history book, you know, that's our English book or something. And I think that was a real good step in the right direction, you know, to do that.
Well, and you know, I just want to make a comment about that. I'm under a non-disclosure agreement, so I can't go into this in any depth, but I happened to be having a talk last week with someone who is manufacturing something, and one of the big issues in this particular thing is that they wanted this thing to look good because blind kids have the same desires to have flashy looking things and interesting looking things as sighted kids. So I think you're right, Margaret. I think that there is more and more an awareness that blind doesn't have to be ugly and Braille doesn't have to be, you know, a Braille book doesn't have to look like a tome. It can have some character and interest.
Well, I thought that was great. And I wanted to tell you that I have a low vision support group, and about a year ago, we did I've been doing a support group. I'm in my fourth year. So anyway, we decided to what we called Explore Braille. And I said, what y'all need is a way to write down your name and address, phone numbers, and make you a card file. So I said, anybody that's interested in, you know, seeing what Braille's like, you know, give me $5 and we will order some Janus slates from the APH. And they come with a little saddle stylus, which I think is kind of neat. And I got some black elastic cord and tied the stylus to the slate and went to Walmart and bought some plain 3x5 index cards. And I started out, of course, we looked at the Braille cell, you know, in the egg cartons like they talked about a while ago, except mine were golf balls.
There you go.
But anyway, and anyway, they just really enjoyed that. So I had some alphabet cards I gave out and everything, and I had 10 people doing that, and two of them figured out how to use the alphabet card and write their name and everything.
That is awesome.
So we had a wonderful time with that. Now we have looked into what Hadley has, and when I did the Braille courses, I didn't know about it, but they have what they call a Braille readiness course, and it is to teach people to track the lines to tell if there's three Braille cells together, which one of them doesn't have all the dots there and stuff like that. So we're doing that now. People that are having trouble with tracking the lines, we're getting them signed up for this simple little course and, you know, just get them started and everything. And I help everybody that, you know, is having any kind of problem. And people are excited about that. And every time somebody in my group signs up for a Braille course, I hook them up with someone in my Lions Club, and the person in the Lions Club gets a Hadley School for the Blind Lions Club pin for their vest. And when we get 10 of them, we're going to, you know, my club's going to get a patch for the banner.
Oh, that's great.
For the blind.
That's
and
great.
So we're just having fun with that. Everybody's enjoying it. That's not much. That's the cheapest way I know to write Braille. Is that little $5 slate from APH.
Yep. Well, Margaret, you do great work, and try
keep
to listen.
Keep up the great work, because you're not only teaching them Braille, but you're also giving them a reason to keep coming back. And, man, I mean, you're doing so many things on multiple levels, giving them confidence and belief in themselves.
Oh, yeah, it's making them feel better, and people
walk a little taller, walk a little straighter.
That's right, because people think you can't learn anything if you
that's
go blind,
right.
You know. And,
yeah.
And so, but I just wanted you to know that's just the easiest way I know to get started.
That
and
is great.
Just, you know, y'all just keep on. But I had to tell about that. Cause
well, I'm glad that you
thank
did.
You.
And don't forget to listen next week. I have Carla Rushville on as my guest.
Oh, I know it. And I'm just hoping my computer gets fixed so I can.
I hope you can. Well, get your daughter-in-law's laptop again if you can't.
Well, it's hard. She did share, but she... You know, she's like me. She likes her computer, too. So.
Sure.
Well, thanks a lot, and hopefully I'll get in there next week. But if I miss it, I'm going to have to do some calling.
Okay.
There you go.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Margaret. Bye-bye. 866-666-7926. Let's go back to your recipe.
All right. Which one?
I don't know.
Oh, my goodness. Let's talk peanut butter cookies real fast.
Oh,
y'all.
Yeah, let's talk peanut butter cookies.
This one came in from a customer, Gary Rogers, lives way out there near the East Coast there. And this is so simple, y'all. One egg and one cup of sugar. You want to mix those together for about a minute to 2 minutes. And then you plop in one cup of peanut butter.
Wait a minute. So do I mix those in my mixer, my electric mixer?
Yeah, mix them in your electric mixer. It's better to use them with your electric mixer or if you happen to have that Sunbeam 2547 like we have. Oh, that's a man's mixer, right? Yeah.
Hey, wait.
Got a light bulb in the middle of it.
We've got another caller, but I'm going to ask him. No, I'm going to ask him to hold for a minute.
Okay.
Wait. Stop. What speed do I mix this on? Do I? Yeah. It's hard to wind him down,
medium,
man.
Medium to medium low.
Okay. So we got one egg. We got a cup of sugar.
Beat those together on, say, medium for just about a minute to a minute and a half.
Okay.
Add in your peanut butter. Keep the speed the same.
A cup of peanut butter.
And go for about 2 minutes.
Okay.
And a little tip, if you want to, shoot a little vegetable spray or something into your measuring cup before you measure the peanut butter.
Yeah,
in there.
Yeah, that's a good
right
idea.
On out.
Yeah.
Don't
I love your sound
these,
effects.
Though.
Yeah, okay.
The second time I made these, I beat them for probably about 4 or 5 minutes.
Oh, my
gosh. The cops came. I got charged with all kinds of batteries and stuff. But if you overbeat it, it gets kind of crumbly.
Yeah.
So you don't want that. Now, then remove your mixer and just start rolling out balls of maybe about an inch in diameter or so, inch and a half.
Yeah.
Lay them on a cookie sheet. I did them on some of that new foil that I think it's called Release by Foils. I mean, by Foils. By Reynolds. The non-stick foil.
I never even heard of that. Oh.
The bomb.
Wow.
It is cool. Mm. I mean, I've done casseroles with cheese on top of them, and the foil didn't even stick
to
those.
Wow, cool. Okay.
It's really cool. But if you're going to do it on a regular cookie sheet, you might go ahead and grease a cookie sheet. It can't hurt.
You know, I have these wonderful rubber mats for my cookie sheets.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so like the silicone thing?
Yeah. They're really nice. Yeah, they
are awesome, too. Anything to keep that stuff from sticking.
Yeah.
But put your balls on the cookie sheet. I guess, about an inch and a half or so apart. They don't really expand that much, but once I laid the balls down, then you can use a fork to squish them.
Okay.
You know, give it that traditional peanut butter look. We've also used just the bottom of a glass.
Okay.
Kind of squish. I squish them down to about a half an inch thick.
Now, do I take the dough out with my fingers?
Yes. Get your hands in it.
All right. Yeah, well, I do.
Roll them up in a ball. They're going to be a little bit oily because of the peanut butter, but that's okay.
Okay.
Bake them at 350 for just about 12 minutes.
Oh, gosh, I want some now.
And they, I tell you what, they are delicious.
And get out your cold milk, cookies and cow.
Yes. Now, if you want to go... go a little bit on the other side, like I do. I put in one and a half tablespoons of cocoa.
Oh, yeah, chocolate.
And they came out really chocolatey. So next time I might cut that back to one tablespoon.
Okay.
But you'll end up making roughly a dozen to a dozen and a half cookies, just depending on how much you do. Skylar and I have also, and once we flattened them, she sprinkled chocolate chips on top.
Oh, yeah, that'd
be good.
Then
we went back and pressed those back into them. But no flour, it's great.
All right.
Short, simple, quick, and easy.
All right.
Delicious.
Let's bring our caller in. Hi there, caller. Are you as hungry as I am after hearing that?
Absolutely.
Who's this speaking?
This is Brian Collins from Long Beach, California.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Great.
Long Beach, California, man. Let me tell you what. We went to the beach in Long Beach. And I walked for 3 days, and I finally found the water. Y'all have some beaches in California. They're great. They're huge. They're wide. Our beaches in Texas, you can barely get two cars to drive down the dang thing.
Our thing is it's all beach and no water.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then when you do find the water, boo, it's chilly water.
It's chilly, all right. I have two things. The first is a comment. Have you ever tried... doing cakes or cornbread in a slow cooker. I've gotten really good at that.
Cakes are in what?
Cakes in a slow cooker.
Yes.
It turns out, I think it's way better than an oven.
They are, you know, and the first time I saw some recipes for those, I was like, get out of here. You know, it's like the first time I saw a recipe for salmon in the dishwasher. I was like, what?
What?
So I had to try it. But, yeah, we have done, in fact, on the show, we have done a couple chocolate chip. It's a chocolate chip cookie cake that we have done in the crock pot that turns out fabulous.
Oh, you gave us that recipe when you were on the show once before. Yes.
Yes. In fact, Tim and Cheryl gave me that to me. Now, let me ask, do you cook it just in the crock, or do you use a, I've heard of some people doing it in a 3 pound, or I don't think it's 3 pounds anymore, but a big coffee can?
No, I just do it straight.
Okay.
And you put it right into the stoneware.
Right into the stoneware pot.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
now, do you put the recipes that we have done called for buttering like a piece of parchment paper or something and putting it in the bottom?
Do you do that,
or you just toss it right in there?
No, I just put it. Well, depending on which cake mix it is, sometimes I'll do the spray.
Okay.
But most of the time, I just butter or margarine it, and that works really well. After I got really good at doing cakes, I found that cornbread does even really good in the slow cooker.
Wow.
So
now I'm going to have to try that.
Well, my suggestion would be, of course, to start with one of the mixes, you know, like the Jiffy one.
Right.
But then go to your favorite type of a thing and you know, once you get familiar with, you know, the timing and everything, because, you know, the timing on the box, of course, is going to be way different.
Yeah.
But my other question is this. A lot of institutions and organizations that teach cooking to the blind and the visually impaired have a tendency, it seems to me, to recommend not using certain kitchen appliances or barbecues or grills or stuff like that. And it seems to me that the kitchen is, of all the rooms in a household that you have, that it's the most adaptable room there is. And I was wondering if you agree or disagree with this, the way that some of these institutions and organizations are doing this. Like, they only recommend using the microwave, or they may even throw in, like, a George Foreman or something. But
I totally disagree with them putting limitations on what appliances you can or cannot use. I think that, in my experience, too, a visually impaired or blind person can use practically any appliance that a sighted person can use if it's usable. Does that make sense? Like say some of these bread machines, you've got to have sight to program them and set them up. But there are other bread machines that are just basically dump everything in and push one button and they go. When it comes to a George Foreman grill or cooking outdoors on a grill, you know, about the only thing that I have changed in my cooking habits has been frying. I hardly fry anything in a skillet anymore. And I've switched to oven baking or oven frying a lot of stuff. And I guess part of it is healthy reasons for the fried foods and stuff like that. If I were to fry, I mean, I can remember Grandma frying chicken up in, you know, the big old cast iron skillet. And I kind of stay away from that. Maybe it's because I almost burnt my house down frying bacon one time. But, I mean, I still fry bacon in the skillet. Don't get me wrong there. But there's just some things I view as, man, that might be a little bit hazardous.
Yeah.
With hot grease going and I don't know, and me being totally blind and me being the way I am, kind of impatient sometimes. But, I mean, I think there's ways around. I know that when I first lost my sight, at that time it was called the Commission for the Blind here in Texas, where they sent a lady out once, like every 4 to 5 weeks, that spent barely an hour with me. And I needed, I gotta go, you know? That was patience, no. You know, by the time you come back, I've learned 25 different things, and I've already learned what you were gonna teach me the next time. You know, so I just told her not to come and spend her time, you know, give somebody else my hour that needs it more than I do. So for me, I think, I mean, I don't see any appliance that we should be shunned from using or not using. I heard a comment by another cooking for the blind type doodad, where the guy was saying, no, you shouldn't have any glass in your kitchen.
That really spun your spinner. I remember that.
That got
yes.
under my crawl. Like,
it
I'm like, my
did.
God, why?
I did.
You know? I mean, yeah. Think about it. I mean, we put the soapbox away, Dale. Don't go there now.
Well, no, but I mean, and I certainly agree with you. I mean, I think that people should be exposed to the maximum of their potential and not be told, well, limit this. And I mean, in my kitchen, for example, Brian, I have, oh my gosh, I have an electric pressure cooker. I have a George Foreman. I have a George Foreman Showtime rotisserie oven. I have a smoothie maker. I have, you know, I own a waffle iron. I mean, I have a microwave, a stovetop, a cooktop. Why would I limit myself? And in fact, just at the California Council of the Blind Convention, one of the vendors there was a lady selling Pampered Chef stuff. So you can best believe that I've bought a stoneware cookie sheet, and I bought another kind of a cooker, a stoneware cooker. And, you know, why would anyone give us additional limitations to those which blindness already imposes?
Yes.
Agree with you.
And there are so many items out there that's something I've noticed since, you know, we have the contract with Progressive through Blind Mice. There are so many products that aren't "quote unquote" made for the blind,
right? But they're very
usable. They're so usable, yeah. And I mean, and there are some kitchen gadgets that are, gosh, they're a hassle for the blind to use. But there are so many that make it so much easier. And yeah, like Marlena was saying, I've got a griddle, I've got a waffle iron, I've got crock pots, I've got grills, I've got electric skillets, and there's certain, I mean, every appliance, definitely there's certain things you can cook in them that are so much easier than other appliances.
Yeah.
And it just makes, it just increases your ability to prepare delicious foods and meals with a lot less work and stress.
Brian, what's your favorite thing to cook?
Recently it's been French toast in the George Foreman.
Oh, I think that is good. Oh.
It's fast, it's easy, and it's no mess. I mean, what can I say?
Well, the next time I come to Long Beach, I'm coming over for breakfast.
Yeah. Hey, now, Brian, what I'd like you to do, man, is shoot me the cornbread and a couple of your cake recipes.
Actually, I just follow the instructions on the box.
Oh, do you?
Really?
Just mix it up and toss it in there? How long do you let it go in the crock for?
Well, on mine, it takes a little under 3 hours because I do it on the low temperature.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, it was like that recipe I was telling Marlene about earlier, just the you know, a can or even two cans of high filling, and then one box of cake mix, high for 2.5 hours. And one thing I did leave out, you want to put a little toothpick under the lid to let the moisture out.
Yeah.
But, man, it comes out great. So I will, now is it, here we go again, is it a 3-quart or 4-quart or how big is your crock?
You know, I believe it's a 3.
Okay. Cool. I got one of those for Christmas, a new one. All slick and silver looking. Oh, yeah, it's all cool.
One of my favorite things, though, is that, just like you were just mentioning, if you wanted your cake to come out more like a pound cake, leave the toothpick out. But if you want it to come up a little fluffier, put the toothpick in.
Yes. Yeah, if you leave that moisture in, it'll make the cake a little bit heavier.
Yeah, and sometimes that you want it a little heavier for some of the different kinds of things. Like when I was making ice cream cake, I wanted to start with the cake already a little solider than you normally would have it.
Right, right. You do want to make it a little bit heavier. And sometimes I will do that. I'll leave out a little bit of the liquid. Now, you know, I made a cake. It was and gosh, this was so good, y'all. It was a boxed angel food cake mix. And you substitute for the amount of, this one called for water, and you substitute 3/4 of a cup of the water with root beer.
Wow. Oh.
And it comes out, it's a root beer angel food cake. And I did a white cake where you substitute the liquid with strawberry margarita mix.
Oh, my.
And it came out delicious, too.
Wow.
So there's, oh, yeah, just all kinds of cool little things you can do. But, well, man, this is awesome. Crock-pot cornbread. Never would have thunk it.
Yeah.
But I'm going to definitely try it. And, in fact, I've been wanting, I've got, sometimes I buy bananas and let them go bad on purpose so I can toss them in the freezer and freeze them and save them for banana nut bread. I just love that stuff.
Mm.
And especially, you talk about doing French toast. Make yourself a banana nut bread and then slice that up and use that as your toast.
Oh, man, that'd be good.
As French, what, French banana nut bread toast or something.
Yeah. Well, listen, Brian, thank you so much for calling. And I don't know that you've ever called my show, have you?
Actually, no. I the first time I actually heard you or met you was at Braille Note Users Group at CSUN.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm
cool.
I'm glad that you called, and I hope you'll do it again.
Well, hey, Brian, are you on the Cooking in the Dark list?
Actually, I just signed up. I just got the podcasting all set up just about an hour ago.
Oh, excellent. Okay. If you send a message to, an email message to cookinginthedark-subscribe@acbradio.org, you'll get on the listserv with all the other Cooking in the Dark crazies.
Oh, perfect.
And, there's all kinds of recipes flying back and forth, and your comments about doing cornbread or cakes in the crock would be awesome.
Okay.
Because I think some of them folks think I'm a little bit Looney Tunes, too.
Well, that's a whole other subject.
Well, experimenting is half the fun of it.
That's right. That's right. Well, thanks so much, Brian. It's great to have you as a listener, and I look forward to the next time you'll call.
And you guys have a fantastic week.
You
do. We will, buddy. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
866-666-7926. We can probably do a couple more calls.
All right.
We're getting up to... We're getting close to the top of the hour, but
cool.
Not quite there. What do you got for another quick recipe? Man, I'm still salivating.
Well, let's say you
got to
do dishes.
Yeah, I got to do
dishes.
Get
you a salmon fillet, about 1.5 pounds or so.
Yeah.
Lay it on some foil.
Yeah.
Season it with whatever salt, pepper. You want to put a little dill on it, a little olive oil, whatever you want to season it up with.
Yeah.
Wrap it up nice, not super tight, but wrap it up in that foil.
Yeah.
And then if you want, I put another layer around it.
Yeah.
Put it in the top rack of your dishwasher.
I don't believe this.
I'm not lying.
And it doesn't taste like jet dry?
Nope. You got to use lemon cascade. No, but seriously, put it in the top rack of your dishwasher. Make sure the heated dry option is on, you know, so the heating element comes on in the bottom.
Yeah.
And I ran it through, on the pots and pans cycle.
Wait a minute. You don't run the water, right?
Yes.
You do.
I put it in there with a full, with dishes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I did dishes.
I'm
and
losing control.
At the same time.
I'm losing control. So you put it on, like, the pots and pans cycle?
Yeah, so it'll run through two cycles. you know, two wash cycles, and then they heat it dry, and it will poach your salmon. I swear.
Okay.
Skylar came in, saw that, and she goes, I'm not eating that.
I don't blame her.
Candace usually only likes fish that's breaded.
Yeah.
And she goes, you want more? And I go, yeah. And, you know, she went in there to get me another serving, and I heard that foil rustling around, and she was in there munching down, too. It was great.
Where did you ever hear about that?
From the Cooking in the Dark list. A guy, Henry Casson, up in Dallas.
Oh, sure, I know.
Shot that out
yeah,
there. And
I know who
actually,
Henry
if you'll go, to, if you'll Google, like, dishwasher recipes or cooking in the dishwasher, there's all kinds of recipes.
Jeez.
And one was for corn on the cob, but I didn't like it. It didn't cook long enough, you know? It was still kind of not done.
And honestly, you can't taste the soapy taste?
No. By wrapping it, like, you wrap it up nice and, you know, you don't want it skin tight in the foil,
yeah,
but you want it
yeah.
tight.
Yeah.
And I'll fold the foil over, you know, two or three times. Just kind of,
yeah.
you know, make it longer and put the ends together.
Yeah, yeah.
And then fold them down to the fish and fold the ends up. And then I'll put another piece of foil opposite the fold.
yeah.
And do the same thing.
Kind of like probably the way I do, I have this wonderful, I'm sure it's not an original recipe, but one of my favorite things to do in the summertime is, and the reason I'm thinking of it is that I do the same thing with the foil. I take a potato, a large baking potato, and I cut it in half lengthwise, or
right.
at least try to cut it in half. You know, it's
right.
I don't always get it perfect, but okay. And then I melt some butter. And I roll the potato halves, skin and meat side in the butter. Then
okay.
I mince up some garlic and I spread that on top of each half. And then I chop up some onion and I spread that on top of the garlic. Then I bring them together, close them back up and wrap them up in a couple of layers of foil going in two directions, like you're
okay.
just saying, put them on the barbecue. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Take about maybe an hour and 10 minutes. Oh.
That sounds awesome.
And sometimes I even put cheese in there, you know.
Right.
Like I'll take a cheese planer because I don't want thick slices of cheese because I don't.
Right.
I just want the flavor. I don't want the gloppy, gooey cheese.
Yeah.
And so I'll, sometimes I take pepper jack cheese
okay.
or what jalapeno cheese.
Now, see, I was just thinking, man, when you were listing all those off, I was thinking just straight jalapenos.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. You could do that, too. I've also put black olives in there, chopped up
okay.
black olives. Oh, it's to die
cooking
for.
Cooking like that, stuffed in between the meat and the potato, that's just going to get right into the meat.
Oh, it's to die for.
And it's just going to, and with the butter and everything,
yeah.
it's gonna, just cooking those, oh my God.
Oh, it is to die for, except, you know, if you're going to have picky people over who are totally involved in being polite about eating, don't serve them this because you're just going to want to pick this stuff up and eat it.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. Utensils are usually an option at our house.
That's right. They're an option at our
and
house, too.
For, you know, we used to have the rule, if it has a bone in it, you can eat it with your fingers. But
yeah.
We amend those rules all the time.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
sounds great.
Yeah, try it. It is really good.
Yeah, I'm planning on tomorrow breaking the smoker out first time this season. I've got some pork loin that I want to smoke.
Ooh.
So I may wrap up a couple of those dudes. I bought a couple fresh jalapenos that I want to put a little shrimp and bacon
yummer.
And stuff in. And,
oh, yummer.
Smoke those along with it. But that potato
yummer.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's I made it up years and years and years ago, and I think I probably had a couple of Bloody Marys, and I had to cook dinner, and I just went hog wild.
Right? That is the way to go. Well, and that's how great things happen.
Yeah.
You know, just like Stan was saying, man, I'm going to try it. Why not?
Yeah.
What's
yeah.
the worst that can go wrong?
Yeah.
You got to clean up a mess. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's the best that can happen? You're writing a cookbook, you know.
There you go. There you go.
That is really cool.
Yeah, it's.
Yeah, our neighbor turned us on. She calls it sweet sour soup.
Ooh.
And she takes a potato and grates it, you know, like a big russet.
Uh-huh.
She takes a pickle. Grates that, a medium onion, grates that, puts all that in a pot with a cup of rice, a can of beef broth, and then she'll like brown some meat, you know, be it hamburger meat or be it, you know, a couple chicken breasts or something, and toss that in the pot, and just let it basically boil for about 20 minutes and put it on simmer for about 10 or 15.
Oh.
And depending on how sour you want it, you can add a couple more pickles to it.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
But it's a Russian dish.
Wow.
And my gosh, I need a bigger bowl. You know, this stuff was great.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
So that'll be coming to a Cooking in the Dark show near you soon.
Near you soon, yeah. So what are we going to cook this week on Cooking in the Dark, sir?
This week we are doing the scrambled eggs on an onion roll. And then we're also doing grilled cheese sandwiches a couple different ways.
Oh, yum.
So we really slowed it down. You know, we talked about Dean the dog a little bit, you know, at the beginning. And, I mean, it's been, you know, 6-7 weeks since I talked to Tim and Cheryl. So we had some catching up to do.
Yeah. And how is
and then,
Dean the dog?
The following week is when we do the cheese enchiladas.
Oh.
Which were just fabulous.
Mm.
And the recipe for the cheese enchiladas serves 8.
Wow.
It makes like 20 enchiladas. So
wow.
It makes quite a bit. But the cool thing is, like I was explaining on the show, when you're doing them, make them in a couple different pans.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, while you've already got the mess out and you're doing it, you may as well make a lot.
Make a bigger mess, yeah.
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 And then, you know, go ahead and bake them. And then one pan of them, just freeze them.
Sure. Yeah.
And then when you want them, pull them out. I mean, dinner in a snap,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's like when I do twice baked potatoes.
Oh, aren't they good? Yum, yum.
You know, when I do one, I do 6 or 8 of them.
Yeah.
And just wrap them up in foil, toss them in the freezer, and then when you need them, man, they're done in a jiffy.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just, you know, sometimes take that rainy Sunday and make yourself some meals ahead of time.
Yeah, makes good sense. Now,
one thing we're planning on doing a little bit down the road, I was going to do a stir fry. I was thinking about doing that until I saw the zucchini and squash. They should have threw them back and let them grow a little more. They were little bitty guys, and man, they must have been good, too, because they were high dollar.
Wow.
But I mean, zucchini was like, almost $2 a pound.
Holy moly.
And it was, a cigar was bigger than this. You know, okay, let's move it on.
Now, you mentioned Dean the dog, and before we go here, which we're going to have to do in about 5 minutes or so, give us a little report on Dean the dog. How's he doing?
Dean the dog is doing great. And he is such a knucklehead. He is so entertaining. We had laminate flooring put in.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things in his puppy profile was that he loves to run and slide across the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, he does.
Yeah.
So he's found a couple rubber toys that are balls, you know, that he can run with and let fly out of his mouth and then go chasing them and slide into stuff with them. And he's hilarious.
Well,
his work is doing great. Country work was something that I have to have a lot of in this area.
Sure, yeah.
And up there in training, of course, a lot of the areas we went to for country work, they knew, hey, we do country work here.
Yeah, yeah.
So they were kind of accustomed to that. So down here, it's taken a little bit to get him into that. But he's picking it up well, so we're fixing to move on with some longer routes and a little more, confusing routes, if you will, because we've got sidewalks all over our subdivision that don't necessarily follow the roads. They just cut through parks and kind of like greenbelt trails, they call them.
Yeah.
I call it a walk through Sherwood Forest, which is kind of nice because you're walking, you're not walking next to the roads. You know, you're walking kind of between the houses and
that's nice.
The townhomes. So it's really relaxing. You're in the shade. Birds are singing. Squirrels are playing. So I've become so accustomed to walking those routes with Kelsey that my skills in traveling those routes totally diminished.
Sure.
Because I didn't have to worry about, when I brush this bush, then there's two sidewalks and we have to take the second one to the left or whatever, or a little rise, you know, anyway. So I'm having to relearn the routes myself so I can teach them to Dean. And I'm not learning as fast as he is. But, you know, he's doing great. Him and Kelsey are getting along well. I think Kelsey tolerates him, but he's learned now that Kelsey gets fed first, he gets fed second.
Oh, that's what we do, too. Yep, Madeline gets fed first, and Agnes gets fed second. But, I have to tell you a funny story about Agnes, and I'll make it really quick. You know, she, too, loves to play with the ball, and she has a big squeaky ball that is it's big enough she can't get it all in her mouth. So,
right.
So she runs around the house, and she honks this thing, and if you go honk, honk, she'll go honk, honk with the ball. Well, I was at the airport Thursday. heading for my plane, and she was guiding me, and all of a sudden I felt this jerking looking over to the left, and the guy behind me started laughing, and I looked over my right shoulder with a questioning look on my face, and he said, "A kid just went by with a ball." So watch those balls.
See, that's mine.
That's mine.
Over there.
I want to play with that.
That's raw. Well, that's so awesome.
Dale,
you know, what a difference, too, isn't it? I mean, all of a sudden you've got a puppy again.
Yeah, it's great. Listen, thank you so much for joining us. Now, why don't you give your contact information and how people can subscribe to the Cooking in the Dark list again?
Okay. The easiest way, really, is just come and visit blindmicemart.com. There are links on there to the scholarship program and links inside that page to get applications. There is a Cooking in the Dark page, which I've been promising for, gosh, probably 5 months now to get updated. I promise I will do that one of these days, y'all. But you can go on to that link. There's still links to the old Cooking in the Dark shows with Phil Parr and the Handyman guys. I mean, we're talking real old. Back in, gosh, June of 2003, I think, is when those start. What a difference that's been.
Yeah.
And then to subscribe directly to the list, you can send an email to Cooking in the Dark, you know, no spaces, all squished together, /subscribe@acbradio.org. And then you'll get a confirmation message, reply to that. That'll go to our moderators, and then, boom, you're on the list with the other 300 to 325 knuckleheads.
There you go.
And we've got, I mean, they're everywhere. Down under, Australia, New Zealand. We even have a listener, and I'm not sure if she's on the list or if she just listens to the show all the way into the Philippines. We did have people as far away as Germany and one in Russia for a while.
Wow.
So we're spread out everywhere. Great recipes, great people, great friends. If you know any blind students that are graduating high school and moving on to college, have them write us an essay. We've got $2,250, three $750 scholarships waiting to go to help educate our future. So let's do that. And remember, every purchase at Blind Mice Mart, y'all, goes back to the scholarship fund.
Well,
unless you type in ACB Radio in the coupon code, and then a percentage of it goes to ACB Radio as well.
Well, Dale, thank you so much for joining us. We're out of time, and let's be in touch.
Man, we will do that. Yeah, I'll talk to you next week. I want to talk to you about the convention.
All right. Thanks.
We'll be there or be square.
All right. Take care, Dale.
Take care.
Bye-bye. I'm Marlena, and we are just about out of time. Remember, next week, Carla Rusheville will be joining us to talk about the ACB National Convention in Minneapolis. Please come back again, same time, same place. It's been a joy to have you, and I so much appreciate that you take the time to let me visit you in your living room. If you want to get a hold of me, it's Marlena, M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A, at acbradio.org. Thanks to the crew that makes it all possible, from Australia to Arizona, including London, and Gary the Board Guy in the other room. See you next week.